first reading this morning is from Psalm 16, and I'm using the Common English Bible version. Protect me, God, because I take refuge in you. I say to God, you are my God. Apart from you, I have nothing good. Now, as for the holy ones, in quotes, in the land, the magnificent ones that I was so happy about, let their suffering increase because they hurried after a different God. I won't participate in their blood offerings. I won't let their names cross my lips. You, God, are my portion, my cup. You control my destiny. The property lines have fallen beautifully for me. Yes, I have a lovely home. I will bless God who advises me. Even at night, I am instructed in the depths of my mind. I always put God in front of me. I will not stumble because God is on my right side. That's why my heart celebrates and my mood is joyous. Yes, my whole body will rest in safety because you won't abandon my life to the grave. You won't let your faithful follower see the pit. You teach me the way of life. In your presence is total celebration. Beautiful things are always in your right hand. The second reading is from the book of Galatians, chapter 5, verses 1 and 13 to 25, again from the Common English Bible. Christ has set us free for freedom. Therefore, stand firm and don't submit to the bondage of slavery again. You are called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Not only don't let this freedom be an opportunity to indulge your selfish impulses, but serve each other through love. All the law has been fulfilled in a single statement: love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour each other, be careful that you don't get eaten up by each other. I say, be guided by spirit, and you won't carry out your selfish desires. A person's selfish desires are set against the spirit, and the spirit is set against one's selfish desires. They are opposed to each other, so you shouldn't do whatever you want to do. But if you are being led by the Spirit, you aren't under the law. The actions that are produced by selfish motives are obvious because they include sexual immorality, moral corruption, doing whatever feels good, idolatry, drug use, casting spells, hate, fighting, obsession, losing your temper, competitive opposition, conflict, selfishness, group rivalry, jealousy, drunkenness, and other things like that. I warn you, as I have already warned you, that those who do these kinds of things won't inherit God's kingdom. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. There is no law against things like this. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the self with its passions and its desires. If we live by the Spirit, let's follow the Spirit.
Thank you, Linda. So it's a little strange here to not be, to yet still be on screen with you all, though I am overjoyed to be with the other 48 folks that are on the Zoom screen right now, and I am overjoyed that we indeed have this reality that we can, in fact, all be together in this way. But COVID is working its way through our family. We are on person number 4 in a household of 4 with COVID, and soon that person will be well, and we will be able to emerge again as a family, which will be lovely. So the title of this sermon is called Murmurations, and I'm not sure, it was a word that I had not heard. It has nothing to do with murmuring, as in talking quietly and all. It has to do with this amazing phenomenon in nature that a blog post that by a friend of mine, a colleague, a brilliant theologian by the name of Reverend Susan Williams wrote about this week. It is this incredible event in nature in which individual starlings, these very small, almost nondescript birds, create this collective flock, sometimes in the hundreds of thousands, and they en masse take to the sky in a display of shape-shifting wonder. I have a video here of a series of murmurations. Chris, if you could show that, it would be wonderful. It is indeed a dance of dazzling beauty. And I will send out the link. I'll try and put it in the chat a little bit later, the link to this YouTube video, which shows up even better when you're watching it on your own computer. It's one of creation's displays. It's akin to watching the Aurora Borealis, to seeing double rainbows emerge and go away and reemerge, to being on Kauai and seeing the folding cliffs of Ka'alau emerge out of the mists. It is so much more. It leaves us in wonder. It enraptures us in beauty. It humbles us in mystery. In your presence, the psalmist says that Linda read for us earlier, is total celebration. Beautiful things are always in your hand. And as I read those words and I see this picture of starling murmuration, these hundreds of thousands of birds doing this amazing dance, I think how lovely if feelings of awe and wonder and beauty mirrored what many of us feel today. Knowing the bulk of those who are present in worship today, knowing that you have been following along with myself the Supreme Court decisions of the last 72 hours, I doubt for many of you that there is much feelings of joy and wonder and beauty at this moment. You know, it was more than 5.5 years ago that I first stood in the pulpit at Church of the Crossroads. I was not yet your pastor. I was not a candidate to be your pastor. I was simply someone that my friend Becca Kessler had called up and said, would you mind coming and preaching for us? And the Sunday that I agreed to preach happened to be the second Sunday in November of 2016, which I discovered happened to be the Sunday following the 2016 presidential election. And though I did not know many of you in Church of the Crossroads at that time, I knew of the church by reputation, so it did not surprise me to find that in that moment, a little more than 5.5 years ago, when I stood in the pulpit there, I was not surprised to find a feeling of something akin to a funeral. Something akin to a funeral in which there was indeed this sense of fear and division, self-righteousness that was going on across the world, that there was in the people in front of me, people that were feeling numbed, people that were feeling lost, people that were feeling afraid, and knowing that at the very same time that I was standing in this pulpit in a church that was centered on a gospel of love and inclusion and welcome, such as we celebrate on ONA Sunday, that there were full-throated voices being given to gospel, to a gospel of division and self-righteousness in many churches by many preachers and pundits and politicians. And I can tell you that in those 5.5+ years since I first stood in that pulpit, there have been few Sundays since then in the journey that we have had together in which I anticipating finding similar feelings of grief and anger and fear and numbness as I do today. The Supreme Court decisions of the last 72 hours have been, for many of you I know, fingernails drawn across the chalkboards of our lives, leaving us on edge and uncertain of how to go forward. Just imagine, just think that just a little more than 72 hours ago, there was a decision that is handed down on the, that has to, was complicated yet consequential, having to do with the Miranda rights, weakening an individual's protection against self-incrimination. That alone in most years would have been a decision that would have been a shocker in most times. And yet that itself was overshadowed the very next day by the Supreme Court ruling on gun ownership, protecting as a Second Amendment right the ability to carry weapons outside of the home, upending and challenging the laws of many states, including right here in Hawaii, and possibly challenging the laws that were already being considered by many states. And ironically, that happening in the very same time frame as the most significant gun control legislation was passed by the Senate, a Senate that we know passes nothing these days, and yet they came together in a bipartisan way to create the most significant gun control legislation in 30 years of legislation that itself may be challenged as a result of the Supreme Court ruling, and that in itself would have been enough. But all of that is overshadowed by the overturning of Roe v. Wade that gave women's right to have control over their bodies some 50 years ago. And if you think that's enough, even that is somewhat overshadowed by Justice Clarence Thomas's signal in his supporting opinion that contraception and marriage equality and who knows what else are at risk due to this decision. And I know, as I look out at this congregation on Zoom and there, sitting there in Crossroads, that for many of you gathered here on this Sunday, it doesn't just leave you on edge, but for many of you gathered here, if not for yourself, but for friends and family and whole communities that you know, these decisions strike a fear that is not just about what is next, but a fear for one's actual safety, a fear for your own lives. So it hardly feels like a Sunday to revel in the beauty of God's creation, like the murmurations of the starlings. Certainly doesn't feel like a very open and affirming Sunday. When the psalmist says, as Linda read for us in verses 9 and 10, to God my heart celebrates, my mood is joyous, my whole body rests in safety because you, God, won't abandon my life to the grave. You, God, won't let your faithful follower see the pit. We realize that when the psalmist has to say, you, God, will always be faithful, it belies a reality that though God may not abandon and sentence some to the pit, clearly there are those in the community who will indeed abandon to the grave, sentenced to the pit, the lives of some within their own community. After all the work that has been done, work that so many of you have been a part of, ensuring that lives are valued and not abandoned, lifted up and celebrated, not thrown into a pit, the realities of the present national landscape are beyond disturbing. That present national landscape, which sadly is not limited to our own nation by any means, is a story we have seen before. A sometimes militant coalescing around a set of norms that strictly define some as in and others as out. It is a dualistic worldview. There is that which is right and that which is wrong, and it is best that you be on the side of that which is right. And as always, those who are in power get to define what is right and wrong. And as long as you can guarantee that you are on the right side, it can indeed be an attractive way of living. It requires little thought. Doesn't require engagement of heart or spirit, simply requires following the rules and fitting into an established norm of that which has somehow been decided, of that which is right, that which is on the inside, all others on the outside. This dualistic enterprise, which easily becomes a form of legalism, is what Paul is centered on, even at times raging about in most of the epistles particularly in this letter to the church of Galatia. Here it is adherence that Paul is talking about to a legalism of his own Jewish faith, a legalism that is defined by more than 600 laws that impact social interactions, diet, dress, and deportment. For adherence of this legal code, it gives clear definition of who is in and who is out, who is deserving of my presence and who is an anathema to my presence and thus justifiably even persecuted. And 300 years later, the Roman Empire, the very entity that crucifies Jesus, persecutes the Jews, destroys the temple, uses the same dualistic, legalistic playbook as it embraces Christianity and begins to use that faith that is supposed to be rooted in love as a bludgeon of submission. And even when Rome falls, the all-powerful church, now merged with empire wherever it goes, all too often continues this blunt force trauma on every people and every land it encounters on its march across the world. And 2,000 years later, we are again present to such a dualism, complete with a narrow definition of what is normative, that which is right, but now cloaked in the cross, cloaked in the flag, and now emboldened by the court. Truthfully, as my friend Reverend Williams in that blog post that got me thinking about murmurations at the very beginning said, what we are seeing is that which is right is also so often, and this is where she is so provocative, equally equated with that which is white. We are witness to a coalescing of power that allows those who are right to enforce their rightness with an impunity on any who would dare to stray outside of the norms. Paul, in no way, when he goes after his Jewish faith, means to impugn his faith. It is the very same faith that the one that he follows, Jesus the Christ, was an adherent of and a teacher of. But Paul, like Jesus, understood that the heart of faith is not an adherence to 10 commandments, 100 commandments, 600 commandments, but an adherence to the one commandment that is ascendant over all others. You shall love your neighbors as yourself. That's it. Jesus, of course, roots that very command in the other supreme command, you shall love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, of which love of the neighbor is the same. John the Evangelist will say years later, you cannot say that you love God and hate your brother and neighbor, nor can you love your brother and neighbor without loving God. And what Paul then says to this nascent church is as true today as it was then. We who are called to be the followers of this carpenter from Nazareth, we who are the descendants of that early church, are called not to dualisms of that which is right and that which is wrong. We are called to love our neighbor. Full stop, end of discussion. That's it. That is the call. The fruit of answering that call is rarely neat and tidy, as dualisms will promise us. It doesn't lend itself well to flowcharts or strict organizational structures because at its root, it is responsive and not predictive. Called to love one another's neighbor is a call to being responsive, not predictive. Its very beauty is in its ability to respond creatively, sometimes spontaneously, to the needs of the neighbor as they become apparent. Which brings me back to Murmurations, the title of this sermon. Reverend Smith, Reverend Susan, when she writes this last week, she used this amazing display of the starling murmuration as a metaphor of possibilities in these troubling times. On their own, a starling is incredibly vulnerable. But scientists hypothesize that one of the reasons for the murmuration is there is strength in numbers. As a flock can protect each other from predators in ways that are stunning, imagine, Reverend Susan says, predators that are met with a formidable challenge, huge, bully predators running from a community of thousands of birds determined to live and not be attacked. What if, she asks, Like starlings, we stop thinking of ourselves in silos of our own griefs, but instead as coalitions that can challenge the bullies who are using being right to justify their bullying. To impose intolerable consequences is what they do on those who have been determined to be outside. What if she says, again, provocatively, all of the non-white, all of the non-heterosexual, all of the non-Protestant, all of the non-male people? And I recognize as I say each one of those that I check off every one of those boxes on myself. But if all of those people were to coalesce, that's way beyond 50% of the population, like the starlings care for friends and coalesce to repel their common foes. Indeed, it is a powerful metaphor, one that is well worth considering, but scientists are not convinced that the only reason that murmurations exist is for defensive purposes. For what scientists have noticed as they look at those murmurations is that their movement is similar to what is seen at the very tiniest atomic level. What happens to a mass of electrons when a nearby particle becomes magnetized? A common pulse moving through those electrons creates patterns there at the atomic level of beauty and grace. What if we listened to Paul's call to the churches and allowed the murmurations to be the metaphor, and we allowed that the Spirit of God, the Spirit of love, is moving through us as a community, a spirit that is like that pulse, that magnetic pulse moving through the electrons that murmurates our communities into a dance of beauty and love. If we are indeed such a community guided by the Spirit of love, as Paul exhorts the Galatians to be and thus exhorts us to be, then our nature will never be static. It will always be shape-shifting, responding to the needs and realities of the moment. Here, the open-ended, wondrous attributes that Paul lifts as the fruit of such communities that are guided by a spirit of love. They are communities of joy and peace and patience and kindness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. So let's look again for just a moment at murmuration. Let's allow ourselves, as we watch this video that Chris is going to put up for us in just a minute, allow ourselves to be one of the thousands in that murmuration, moving in sync as the pulse of God's Spirit moves and meanders through our very beings. Chris, if you can show the next video. Indeed, we, the starlings of murmuration, the moment is upon us, considering the decisions that have been handed down in the last 72 hours and the ones that are to come, that our murmuration must be one of defensive protection, as Reverend Susan speaks of, circling with one another, ensuring that here in this community is not just no matter who, no matter where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here, but that no matter what, you are indeed safe. That should the powers that be choose to sharpen their legal knives any further and come for any one of us, that we will as one stand together, hold tight to each and every one. Perhaps it is that moment for a defensive murmuration. But in this moment that feels so very gloom and dark and difficult for so many, A moment of futility and despondency for many of us, and grief that threatens to mark our days. Let us not lose sight of the story, that the story of our faith includes a ghastly execution, an execution of one whose only crime was to proclaim the supremacy of love. But that execution, that time of the deepest shadows of 2,000 years ago, was not the final word. That despondency and grief felt by those followers on that Friday was not the final word, for within days the tomb is empty. The one whose death was witnessed by many is alive again. Followers who were once cowering behind locked doors hit the streets to proclaim that love never fails, that the dawn always follows the deepest of the nights. Paul, a vicious perpetrator of unseemly persecution, is turned upside down, therefore right side up on the road to Damascus, begins to lead one outpost of the beloved community after another to truly live into that dance of love, to truly make a home for all, for the full voiced and those who have been voiceless, for those who've been marginalized and those who've enjoyed being at the center, for the Jew and the Greek, the rich, the poor, the free and the slave, the male and the female. Despondency and defeat, despondency and defeat do not carry the day. A love dance powered by the Spirit of God that moves as one and welcomes all. That's what carries the day. The days ahead of us are indeed more challenging than we might have anticipated not so many years ago. There is work to be done and an openness to the Spirit to be lived. Let us recall, though, that the church in its finest expression, whether it is a church as a whole or the small church or whatever is a community, the church in its finest expression has never been when it stands as a rigid bulwark of rules and principles, but when it has been a moving, dancing entity, a murmuration of love, morphing and shape-shifting to respond to the needs as they come. As Paul says, it is a church of love. Love while the hate mongers strive to have their way, offering ourselves in joy when the world wishes to leave a trail of despair, being present as vehicles of peace in the midst of a world that thrives on conflict, being exemplars of patience when instant gratification seems to too often be the religion of the day, offering the open hand of kindness in a world inclined to the closed fist, exuding goodness without self-righteousness, faithfulness without a litmus test of beliefs, walking with gentleness. These are all of the things that Paul speaks of as the fruit of the Spirit, walking with gentleness amongst those who yearn to instead leave their forceful imprint, be practitioners of self-control, rejoicing in the knowledge that love makes us free, but not free to do whatever is the whim of the day, to be able to work for the day when the overarching norm is not a rigid set of beliefs and structures, but simply the love of neighbor and of God. We cannot be all this and even more by force of will, or by following a rigid code of conduct or adhering to some arbitrary norm. We become this fruit of love by allowing the Spirit of love to move with and through us as individuals and as a community. As it says on St. Patrick's breastplate, and let this be our prayer that opens us into prayer: Christ before me, Christ below me, Christ behind me, Christ ahead of me, Christ to the side of me, Christ within me, Christ be me. Amen.